Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Intuition, and you're listening to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in. We're coming from Atwater Village in the new Cosmic Zoo studio run by Daddy Kev and No Can Do, as always. I got my man Ben Shim behind the boards. Follow him on Twitter at IamDatabase, base with two S's. Follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow us on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat. We're trying to get our bars up on Twitter. I've only got like 75 followers right now on that page, so you guys need to start following us if you're tuning in. And if you're already following us, the 75 of you that are there, I appreciate you. Everybody else is in South by Southwest right now, and I'm watching that from home. And it's fun. I wish I was there. Some of my friends are having a blast there. But, you know, one of these days I'll get out there. I was actually supposed to be home right now taking care of my dad because it's my mom's spring break. But she decided to stay in Alaska, and so I've been down here. And last night, my friend Dumbfounded and Blue, they were playing at Low End Theory. So I took a long nap from like 7 till 10:30, and I pushed myself out of bed and went to Low End Theory, and I got there around 11, and as I'm driving, I'm driving through Chinatown, and I was cruising next to a bus, and I'm kind of like head-to-head with this bus. I'm in the left lane, and the bus is in the right lane, and we're both kind of, our headlights are in the same place, when all of a sudden I see this orange tabby cat just jump so fast and just trying to make it in front of the bus, and it made it past the bus, and I went, oh fuck, and I hit my brakes, and it to no avail, I fucking killed a cat with my car. And it's the first time that I've ever hit an animal with a car, and I feel miserable about it. It was very scarring, like the crunch that happened. And I got out of my car when I parked thinking that there was going to be like fur and blood all over my tires, but thankfully there weren't. But I could see him in the rearview mirror, and it was so bad. And so it was probably someone's pet. It may have been a feral cat. I don't know, but I fucking feel terrible about it. And I feel like I'm going to have nightmares. And, you know, just for good karma's sake, like, I want to say I'm sorry to whomever's cat it was, because there's nothing that I could do. It was not on purpose, I promise. And it's crazy because living in Los Angeles, there is that distinct chance that you might hit someone's pet. Where I come from in Alaska, that's not really an issue because people live kind of so far away from each other. The chance of hitting someone's dog or cat is slim, I think. It's something that you don't hear about that often. I feel like up there, if you hit an animal, there's a very good chance that you could die because people hit moose up there a lot. Like one time, my friend Josh was driving his Jeep Grand Cherokee, and he hit a moose going only 15 miles an hour, and his Jeep Grand Cherokee got totaled because the moose kind of just plunked on top of his hood. He kind of hit the moose. It swept the leg, you know, like Karate Kid, plopped on the hood. The car gets crushed because moose weigh like 2 tons or something. They're fucking huge. And the moose got up and walked away. Like, that's how crazy hitting animals in Alaska is. And besides that, all you hit is maybe like a rabbit or a squirrel. Like, we don't have skunks up there. Every once in a while, you'll see a porcupine, but they're very rare. Also very based. But, oh, there's another crazy thing that happened to me today. I tend to always have these like synchronicity moments with the autobiography of Malcolm X. My buddy No Can, who I just talked about, he let me borrow the autobiography of Malcolm X a couple years ago because I had never read it. And so as I'm reading it, it was right when that Kanye West song Power was blowing up. And in the song Power, he says, "No one man should have all that power." And that's actually a quote from the Malcolm X book. And it's also in the movie. I had never seen the movie. I've since seen the movie. It came out when I was a little too young to grasp Malcolm X's importance to the grand scheme of our country. But I've since finished the book and watched the movie. And so when I was reading that and I got to the part in the book where it says, "No one man should have all that power," I was like, holy shit, that's crazy, because I was just listening to the Kanye song. I really loved it. And then I read that, and it was this crazy moment of synchronicity where two things in my life synced up. And then this morning, literally, I was looking at my bookshelf for some reason as I was walking out the door to come to this podcast, and I saw the Malcolm X book sitting on my bookshelf, And I thought, fuck, man, I've had that book for 2 years now or something at least. I should probably give that back to James because I think, like, you know, there was probably a note on the inside from somebody who had inscripted it to him. And I feel like I'm just holding his property now and I should give it back. And that was literally a last moment thought as I left the house. And then as I'm walking to my car, there's an antique store next to my apartment. And so I'm walking and I look to my right and there hanging in the window is a huge, like 36 by 50 framed Malcolm X poster of the movie starring Denzel Washington, directed by Spike Lee, huge poster. And I said, oh shit, like this is another moment of synchronicity with Malcolm X. I need to go ask how much this is. So I pick it up and I go in and I talk to Rick, who's like the crazy dude that runs this antique store. That's really more of a junk shop next to my house, but he charges like extraneous amounts of money for junk. And I go in, I talk to Rick. And he's like, hey, were you yelling at my Sanders the other day? And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I haven't been home. He's like, oh, well, I know that you work at night. And I thought maybe if you were asleep during the day, you yelled at one of my Sanders. And I'm like, nah, man, it wasn't me. But anyways, how much is this Malcolm X poster? And he goes, well, you know, since there's a little crack in the frame down there, I'll give it to you for 10. I said, fuck, yeah, give me this for 10. Bought it. Took it back to the house. I just thought that it was too much of a weird coincidence to walk out and see that. And so now it'll be hanging on my wall. And there's probably not enough room on my walls. I have so much other shit hanging up. But anyways, today I am proud to present a conversation that I had with a friend of mine named Penny Bird Rabbit. She is an up-and-coming, very talented musician. She's signed to Atlantic. She's worked with Skrillex in the past. She's got some great videos on YouTube. Google her, Penny Bird Rabbit. Look for her on Twitter, at Who Is Penny. She actually performed a really pretty song that I'm going to put up on YouTube, youtube.com/ That's Kind of Neat. So yeah, here's my conversation with Penny. I hope you guys find it enjoyable. Thanks. What were you like as a kid?
Awesome. I was shy, kind of. I had really long hair. I had hair down my butt. And I did, like, musical theater and I liked to perform. I was fun. I played a lot by myself. I hung out in my room. I had, like, I don't have imaginary friends, but I had, like, dolls. I played with Barbies and Ninja Turtle action figures together.
I loved Ninja Turtles.
That's the kind of the kid I was, yeah. Oh, so when I was a little kid, we lived in the desert. I grew up in the Mojave Desert in a place called Ridgecrest. And it was a city, a very small city. And my brother and I, it was the kind of town where you didn't have to, like, lock your door, at least at the time, in the 90s. And we played outside a lot. And we had to be back by dark. That was, like, the requirement. And we would get these buckets. In the desert, there's, like, a million different kinds of ants. And so there were yellow ants and purple ants and red ants and black ants. And black ants you could, like, hold in your hand and they wouldn't bite you. The other ones would hurt really bad. And we would get these buckets and we would go into the desert and find the ant hills. And we would take shovels and we would scoop the ants into buckets and we would have, like, ant wars and they would battle each other.
Like, would you put them in a jar to battle each other?
We put them in these, like, tubs.
Oh, so within the bucket you would just dump whole families of ants?
Ants.
Like, yeah, they'd different like, species so that they would go at each other.
Yeah, we were turds. And then we would, like, find scorpions or, like, roly-polies and, like, toss them into the mix and see what would happen. But that was, like, our form of entertainment.
What was the dominant species?
Black never won. Because they were just, like, the nice ant. But the yellow ants and the purple ants were the nasty ones.
How did the scorpions fare?
They always died.
They get swarmed?
They totally get swarmed.
You were really onto something, because now there's, like, a whole viral video channel of, like, Japanese insect wars, where they do the same kind of thing. Like, they'll put a black widow against a scorpion and see who wins. And
oh,
stuff.
Really?
Yeah, and all the videos are, like, crazy.
Yeah, we started that.
Oh, you're very, very trend. Very
yeah,
on trend.
I was ahead of my time.
So why were your folks out in the desert?
My mom grew up there. And I was born in Oceanside, and shortly after she was...
Holler at my Osider riders.
Yeah.
So you were born in Oceanside, and then you moved out to the desert at what age?
Yeah, when I was just a little baby. Just an itty-bitty baby. And we lived there for, like, 10 years. My mom's family lived out there, and she wanted to be close to her parents.
What did your dad do for work out there?
When I was younger, he did something with, like, housing, and then he got into, like, computers, and then he managed, like, a PC store, but then they had, like, a Microsoft store. Oh, I said Microsoft, but I meant Macintosh. And back when, like, the Apple logo was, like, the rainbow Apple. So I grew up, like, with computers.
Back when Macintoshes were just made for, like, fifth grade classrooms.
Yeah. And they had, like, the Mario teaches typing. Like, that's what Macintosh was for, basically.
The Apple IIe's with Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah. Yeah. Remember when they came out with the Macintosh thing? It was called, like, the iMac. And it had, like, the big rainbow-colored back. It was, like, blue or purple.
I shit you not that my mother still has one of those in her bedroom.
I think we still have one at my parents' house somewhere. And they had the dinosaur game on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I killed that game.
It's crazy because now I have, like, a modern iMac. It's, like, huge 27-inch screen.
Right.
I'm just tooting my own horn right now, but my computer's very swag. And I go... I go home and I see my mom has like this teal blue fucking...
I walked into someone's office the other day and they had a TV that had like a VCR connected to the TV.
Oh, yeah.
Like, not like a, you know, a VCR on top, like it was in the TV. And I was like, why do you have this? I heard that they're making VHS tapes and they're making them to sell, but they're selling them for like a lot of money.
One of the first things I ever recorded on a VCR was a New Kids on the Block concert on the Disney Channel when I was in about second grade, and I still have it.
I remember coming home from sixth grade one time. My mom was so excited. She had like a chair in front of the TV and she's like, I have something for you. And she recorded the making of NSYNC's Bye 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 on MTV.
Wow.
She like recorded it for me and it was like very exciting.
This will show our age difference, but The Simpsons Sing the Blues was this big deal when I was in like fourth grade.
Yeah.
And they were going to premiere two videos. It was like called Deep, Deep Trouble and The Bartman. And so I stayed up till like midnight to tape it on MTV. My folks were really cool about it. I used to love The Simpsons. Still do. I still love The Simpsons.
That's a funny scene.
Yeah, yeah. So anyhow, you're out in the desert. Your dad works for Apple.
Yeah, basically. And he was also like school board president for a while.
What was it like going to elementary school out there?
It was cool. I mean, having, it was a small town, so everyone knew, you know, everybody.
Is it kind of white trash up there?
Yeah.
I'm from a small town too. My town is very white trash. And I've been to like the desert,
yeah.
You know, Palmdale and stuff like that.
It's stuck in a time period. Yeah. It's still the 90s in Ridgecrest. I went back, you know, and you think like, was it like this when I was little or is it just like degraded to this? Like, is this the point we've reached, you know? Was it always like this or have, you know?
Were there a lot of kids to play with? Did you kind of live in a neighborhood or were you out in the sticks?
For a little bit, I lived in a neighborhood and I had like my best friend lived around the corner and we knew their family. Luckily, you know, like we knew them from church and her older brother was my brother's best friend. And she was my best friend. And the age difference between her and her brother was 3 years, and the age difference between me and my brother is 3 years. So it kind of just, like, fit. Like, we just, like, the four of us kind of just
I feel like every family has a family like that, because my family has a family that's the same way. Like, the two sons are the exact same age as my brother and I, and then because all four of us got along, then our parents got along as well, and now they're, like, a close family friend that has grown up with us, you know?
When you're little, you can be friends with anybody. I remember I was at an aquarium one time, and this little kid, I watched her go up to this other girl and go, do you want to be my friend? And I, like, teared up in my heart, like, melted. And I just, that's how people should be, you know?
Yeah.
Like, do you want to be my friend?
Yeah.
Like, it's so simple. And I think, I don't know, I wonder what it would be like to meet those people now if you would, like, connect and meet. But when you're younger, it's magical. But, and then we moved into the house my mom grew up in and kind of downsized a little bit. And we moved into this, like, tiny two-bedroom house in the middle of the desert. Like, you could see houses, but we were kind of in the middle of nowhere, which was fun because you got to do anything you wanted. And that's where we got into like a lot of trouble.
Did you do all kinds of like desert broed out stuff? Like were you guys on quads and,
no.
and motorcycles and stuff?
You know what? I have a dirt bike now, but we didn't get into it until like 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm.
It was just such a shame. My uncle though was, he like did, you know, the whole thing. I don't even know what you would call it, but he had like a dirt bike and he would like do jumps and things and he like raced.
You're spending a lot of time in the desert imagining and were you like putting on plays and musicals with your dolls?
Yeah, all the time. I remember I have this very funny memory of me sitting like on the street corner at like sunset. I don't know if you've ever seen like a sunset in the desert or like in a valley, but it kills any like beach sunset. Beach sunsets are stupid compared to
They're
this.
Very pink and orange. They're like very vibrant colors, the desert ones.
They're beautiful. It's unbelievable. We would actually, like, my aunt lived in the town, and when we would see like a beautiful sunset, we would call to make sure the other person saw it. Like, do you see this? Like, we're, I don't know, that's like lame and not all you have to do in the desert, I guess. But I have this memory of me just like singing and just like making up songs for like 20 minutes. I just sat outside and just sang. And yeah, I was always singing and dancing, and I did like ballet, and I would sing like Aqua in my bedroom on my bed, like really loud, and like every word to like the whole Aqua CD.
Come on, Barbie, let's go party.
Yeah. I remember my mom being like, don't play that song.
I love that your influences are so not what I would expect, because when I look at you and I see this like funky alt looking chick with pink hair and like crazy outfits and lots of layers, I'm like, she must be so up on like the craziest indie music shit. And you're like, I love Katy Perry.
No.
You don't?
No.
Oh, I take you for a Katy Perry fan. No.
No? No, I'm not a Katy cat.
Who are you fucking with?
Britney Spears.
You love Britney?
Yeah.
Okay, who else?
My three pop ladies are Beyonce, Britney Spears, and Gaga.
What are three influences that you have that people wouldn't expect?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what people do expect, but I listen to a lot of Blink-182. I listen to a lot of The Shins, and I listen to this band called As Tall as Lions a lot. They're cool. They're not really a band anymore, though.
As a kid, were you the one getting picked to like be the lead in all the plays that had singing?
No, but I had like cool parts. I mean, what got me into doing music, Babes in Toyland, are you familiar at all with that play?
Yeah, vaguely.
Me too, I don't really remember. But there's this scene where they like go into the forest and like a little fairy angel comes out and like sings a song. And I got that part.
You're the fairy angel?
It wasn't actually my first solo. My first solo was second grade. I sang Jolly Old St. Nicholas in front of the entire town. I mean, in Ridgecrest, like the only theater was the high school theater. And so when anything happened there, like, the entire community went. It was huge, I mean, now that I'm an adult, it probably wasn't as big as I remember it being when I was, like, 3'5". But in Babes in Toyland, I had my first real solo that got me into, the lady who, like, directed the play was an agent. And so I started doing, like, taking acting classes.
At what age was that?
Like, 6. I did a lot of work out there because, you know, like, all the car commercials out in the desert? Those are all filmed, like, by where I used to live. There's, like, this famous road called, like, Garlock or something. And all the car commercials are, like, filmed out there, or a lot of them, I mean. And there's a small living ghost town called Randsburg. And a lot of people film movies and commercials and weird stuff out there. So I was always kind of on set doing something, whether or not I was, like, an extra. I did a lot of stand-in work, which is basically, like, you go in and you sit in the room that they're like doing the lighting for so that the actor doesn't have to do it. So like I did, okay, this is funny. This is a cool story. So Johnny Depp did this movie called The Brave where he like wrote and directed it and it got like booed. You can look it up, but it's like this awful movie about like a snuff film. It's very sad and weird.
People started booing at the
theaters.
It was
like, they like were premiering it and it was like, boo. I mean, it didn't even come out. Like when, yeah, it was awful. Like, that's what everyone says. I don't know. I mean, I think Johnny Depp's fantastic, so how bad could it have really been? But I don't know. I was like 8 or 7. No, I was about 7. So I was the stand-in for the character that played his daughter, and he was the director. So I was always on set talking to him. And I knew who he was because Edward Scissorhands was like my favorite movie when I was a little kid. And so I would just kind of like stare at him. And we got along so well that I got to eat with them. I didn't have to eat with like the extras. I got to eat in the main room with like all the other actors. And I got to go to all the cool things. And I knew like, it was just cool. I would like walk on set and they'd be like, hey. And I was like this little tiny thing with like big hair and like this huge head. I had a huge head when I was little because I was so small. My head's always been this size. And, yeah, like, when he came up to me, and he's like, when you rap, when you're done, you, like, come let me know. And I did. I walked up, and I was like, Johnny, I'm done. And he, like, was like, okay, stop. And, like, stopped filming and, like, picked me up and, like, took a bunch of pictures with me, and I left. And I just they had to dye my hair so that it was darker, like the little girl that played his daughter. So I had this, like, dark auburn brown hair.
What color is your natural hair?
I don't know.
It's all pink right now.
I know.
Blonde.
I mean, it looks brown, like a dirty blonde, but I don't know. I haven't seen my natural hair in like 10 years.
So you get an agent when you're six and you start doing all this work. When did you kind of discover that you had this knack for singing?
The same age. I started taking the lady who did in Babes in Toyland, my very first real play, who did like the music, became my vocal coach. And I was like the youngest person at her studio. I was like 6 and a half, 7. But I started taking voice lessons and I did really well. And I could, you know, Phantom of the Opera, I could like, my range was just incredible. I was just, had this like tiny little mouse voice and I could just, it was this huge range. I love singing. There's videos of my brother and I at the piano at home singing like two-part harmony. And I was like 7, you know? And we're just a musical family. I have memories of my dad just sitting on the bed playing guitar to me. All of us can play an instrument and all of us can sing.
What age did you start playing piano?
Probably like 5. Wow. I'm not awesome at it. I can read music. I'm really grateful for all of that because I'm not some like wonderful pianist. I can't just like sit down and be like, and like play like jazz for you. You know, like some people. And in fact, I have this video of me singing at the piano, playing like chords to Gaga song. And someone like commented like, she's not even playing the piano. She's just playing chords. I remember reading it being like, okay, you do it then. Okay. But you know, I can read music because of all that. And I kept all the things I learned through, you know, singing at that age. I've kept that throughout my whole life, like how to breathe properly. And I just, you learn so much and you can retain so much as a young child. And I'm really grateful for that. I did choir throughout, you know, school, middle school and high school. And I've just kept singing forever.
Were you popular in high school?
I don't know. I was freshman class president.
Really?
Yeah. I remember when I ran, I passed out Smarties with little notes that said, be a Smartie, vote for me. And then ones that said, I had dum-dums, don't be a dum-dum. And I was always really involved in like student government, and we called it ASB.
That was like early social media, passing out hand flyers, you know?
Yeah.
That's what you had to do before Twitter.
Yeah, I think I did okay in high school. I had an older brother that was really cool.
And this was back in Oceanside? You had moved back to Oceanside?
Yeah, I went to Vista High. Okay. And my brother was just like the coolest thing on campus. In this, his senior year, some girl on the yearbook like committee loved him. So like every like 5 pages in the yearbook, there's a picture of my brother. And our yearbook, you know, there's like 4,000 kids at my high school, so the yearbook is huge. And he was just all over the yearbook. So I felt really lucky having him. But
So he was like a senior when you were a freshman?
He was a junior when I was a freshman. So I had him for 2 years in high school with me, which was really nice.
So you're getting invited to all the older kid parties?
Yeah, I just went with him wherever. You know, and if he, like, got in an argument with my parents, he'd look at me, he'd be like, let's go! And I'd be like, okay. And I'd just get in the car and go. He'd be frustrated driving, like, his dumb van he drove. And I would just sit there, you know.
He's in bands, too, right?
Yeah, my brother is awesome. He was, like, in a band in high school, and then right out of high school joined, like, his favorite band. And they're not really a thing anymore, but he's still making music. He's awesome.
Weren't you telling me he had a deal or something?
Yeah, they were signed. He was in a band called Seosin, and they were signed to Capitol. They were awesome.
And what did he do in Seosin?
He was a singer.
So when did you start kind of making your own music?
Okay, so I went home a couple weeks ago, and I was going through boxes of my stuff trying to look for... I was looking for this folder of, like, old poems I had, and I was just, like, dumping out stuff. And I found, like, poems I had written in, like, middle school that were hilarious. But you know what's crazy is that... those things are kind of gems. Like, some of my first songs, you know, I've reworked and made, and I, you know, like, Run Home Jack is, like, the last song on my EP, my first EP. I wrote that when I was 16. You should hear the first demo of it. It's hilarious. But I just, it stuck with me, and it was cool that when I got to rework it, it, you know, came to be what I had heard in my head when I wrote it, but I didn't know how to do it on GarageBand. So... I've been writing songs for a really long time, but not really thinking about it, you know, just kind of doing it and not really knowing that's what I was doing. When I would write poetry, I would hum melodies to what I was writing to help me. And that was before I was like, I want to be a singer. I wanted to write poetry. That's how I would write. I would sit in the garage.
That's how you made it make sense to yourself. You had to give it a melody to make it flow.
The rhyming scheme and like how, you know, how you hold on to certain words. And I don't know, that must be like how rapping is. The way you pronounce things and the way you, you know, perform the word.
I actually write raps by thinking about you writing songs. And then that helps me put it down. I'm like, how would Penny write this?
I do the same. But I'm glad you admitted it first.
When was that point when you decided, I want to be a singer?
So, I mean, man, at a young age, you know that game Life, where that kind of sounded heavy.
You know? You know this thing that we participate in the game called Life?
No, you know the board game Life, how they, you can pick a career. I always wanted to be like the rock star. Like there was like some like beautiful woman with like an afro and she like had a guitar and like I was like, that's what I want to be. I want to be that forever. And when my brother joined his favorite band, it was difficult for me because I was explaining this to like Suits the other day. I was like in a meeting and I was trying to explain like my story, you know, and there's like these like I'm talking to like Suits, right? And I say, yeah, I didn't want to be Ashley Simpson living in the shadow of someone else's dream. And they didn't get it. But at the time, Ashley Simpson was a huge singer, and that was one of her lyrics about Jessica Simpson. And I just trying to make a joke, and they just like stared blankly at me, like they didn't understand. It went like whoosh, over their head. But that was really real to me at the time. That was like a, I was like all about Avril Lavigne and Ashley Simpson, and that song came out. And I remember, you know, right as my brother's like joining his band, I was like, I can't be Ashley Simpson. And so
you don't want to be the girl that's getting famous because her brother's getting famous.
Right. Or like somehow, you know, abuse that or look like I am jealous or something. I was afraid of all of that. And I was like going through a hard time. I was like 16 and like feeling things for the first time and heavy into Dashboard Confessional. So like I was just sad. You know, it's like when you feel emotions and you don't know how to explain them when you're younger.
So you just cut yourself?
And then I just cried a lot. And I graduated high school and I got really into photography. And I wanted to go to photo school. And my parents were like,
yeah. Which one were you trying to go to?
I was trying to go to Brooks. Didn't you go to Brooks?
Yeah, that's where I went.
Yeah.
You're stoked that you didn't go. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm actually really stoked I didn't go. They wanted me to go to beauty school. They're like, you love hair, and you know, I've been dyeing my hair and cutting my own hair forever. They're like, you're so good at that. You should go to beauty. They enrolled me in beauty school. And, I was like, yeah, okay. And then I, like, freaked out. And, like, my brother was home from tour, and I was like, I don't want to go to beauty school. And I just cried to him one night, you know, in the kitchen. And he was like, all right, you've got to just figure it out. Then go somewhere else. And so I moved to Utah, and I lived in Orem, Utah. My best friend was going to school out there.
So you were going to beauty school in Oside or San Diego?
Yeah, they wanted me to go to Oceanside Beauty College.
So you're like 18?
I was 17.
17. And then you're like, nah, I'm not doing this. I'm moving to Utah.
Yeah. And literally like a week and a half later, I just packed everything into my Jeep, and I moved up by myself.
So what took you to Utah?
My friend was going to school there, and she's my best friend, and it's cheap. The most I ever paid for rent was $380, and I lived in like a furnished apartment. And so I was 17, and I couldn't really afford anything more than that. And I worked at Chili's. I worked at Chili's for 4 years, and she moved up, and I was like, you know what?
How stoked were you when the Backstreet Boys did the Baby Back Rib commercial?
Stoked.
Or was it NSYNC?
I was NSYNC. So hot.
Very stoked.
Justin, so hot.
His new record is so tight.
So tight. Did you see him on SNL?
Yeah, he was really good on SNL.
I die.
Justin Timberlake's kind of like one of my man crushes.
Yeah.
And I fully admit that.
Like, that's totally cool.
Like, he's dope.
I love man crushes.
I just feel like I want to high five and be like, you're really cool, and I'd buy him a beer.
You want to just like kind of put your arm around him?
Nah, you know, I just want to be like, yo, man, we could be friends, bro.
Hey, with Twitter, you can. Twitter has allowed for fans to think that they can, like, talk to... It's so weird. I was talking to Brittany, my friend Brittany, about this the other day, about how it's confused fans, I think, that they have such an easy access to the celebrity. And it was so cool at first, like, oh, you're, like, you know, one tweet away from talking. And when you... Like, I get stoked, like, Blake Anderson from Workaholics, like, replied to a tweet. And I, like, lost my mind over it. And it's so cool, but it confuses, I think, younger...
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is that I read the Twitter responses that I get,
right.
And occasionally I'll respond to some, but then some people take it the wrong way, and if you don't consistently respond, they
right.
get sour at you, or they act like you're not friends anymore. It's like, I don't actually know you.
I had that happen to me on Tumblr. After, you know, I did All I Ask of You with Semi, I had, like, a small little fan base of, like a handful of, like, 15 kids that always were tweeting at me and always tumbling.
Now, time out. Uh-huh. You just said that very nonchalantly, but explain it better to the fans who aren't that familiar with you or who Sunny is. What just happened right there?
Oh, okay. Well, actually, I guess I'll go back a little bit further. I moved to L.A. to make music, and I was living out of my car, where I met some people in L.A. they were like, you should really move here. And they were cool enough people to me that I was like, yeah. And I went home like that day and I was working at Guitar Center and a salon. And I was like, I'm leaving later. And I quit. And I drove up and I lived literally out of my car. I had like a laundry basket full of all my clothes and had all my shoes lined up like on the floor of my car. And if I had to, I would stay up all night and then I would sleep in the daytime, you know, because I didn't know, I didn't have anywhere to go. There's a couple studios that I would crash on the couch there until I found a girl to let me live with her while her boyfriend was on tour. And then I met Sunny, who's Skrillex. This is after his first EP, but before the Scary Monsters and Nice Brides EP. And we met and kind of, you know, became like attached to the hip and hung out all the time and, you know, got really close. And it was coming towards the time where I had to be out of this apartment. And I said to him, like, oh, Sunny, I don't know where I'm going to go. Like, if worst case scenario, can I just leave a bunch of stuff in your warehouse? And he was like, yeah, but you need to do that. We'll figure it out. And he, like, walked me over to this loft building, and I kind of just got in. He had lived there. A bunch of his friends lived there. And I met
Is that the place that Syra was living at, too?
Syra lived there for a minute.
Did you already know her previously, or is that where you guys met?
She wasn't living there at the time. I met Syra later through Sunny. And, you know, we were hanging out. I literally sat there the entire time he made that EP. I was there when he got the call that was, like, Deadmau5 was wanting him to make an EP and go on tour with him. And, he was like, okay, hang out. I got to make this EP. And I would just like wake up and go get him coffee and like sit and watch him. And like my eyes were just like this big, you know, trying to like learn as much as I could in Ableton while he was like making stuff.
So you guys ended up collabing.
Yeah. He called me one night and he said, do you want to be on my EP? And his house was literally two buildings away from mine. And I said, yeah. And he goes, okay, come over. And I was in my pajamas and I just walked over to his house and he like handed me a mic. I didn't record that song with headphones. It wasn't proper at all. He just handed me a microphone. And it kind of just happened. And then, you know, it's very surreal. I didn't know at the time what it was going to mean for my life or my career or that it was even like the start of my career. I was writing songs and I would show him the songs and we would talk about him. And we had tried to work on some other things. It just kind of, the magic wasn't like there in that moment, you know, but I'll ask if you just kind of happened. And when the song came out, I remember watching it go on, it was a progressive house song, and I remember like reaching on Beatport, like, or going higher up on the charts to where it got to number one. And I was like, what even? How is this even possible? You know, and I remember talking to people about it, and I didn't really understand. And then one day he was like, I have to go. And I was like, what do you mean you have to go? He's like, I have to go on tour for like 2 years. And I was like, okay, later, like, sad, but bye, I guess. And he left, and then I still didn't understand what the song meant for my life. And he calls me one day, and he's like, hey, let's do a show together in Vegas. And I went out and performed it, and that's kind of when I met my A&R now, and I met, you know, people from my label at that show. I just didn't know how important those things were. It was just kind of like I was having fun with my friend. It was always like that. We were just like having fun, and I didn't understand what any of it meant at all.
What label did you end up getting signed to?
Big Beat, Atlantic's dance label.
I met you like maybe 3 or 4 months ago. You were working at Swingers.
Yeah.
Sometimes my friends and I would go in for lunch to see you, and you'd be our waitress. Yeah. But you just got to quit.
Yes.
Because now you're living off music.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. Yeah, the day I quit my job, or like the last day of working, I crashed my car. And so I was just, like, the money that I had saved was gone. Just gone in, like, one car accident. But it's cool. It's cool to, you know, wake up and not have to... I get to wake up and create and make music and write stories and be creative, which is a huge blessing. I'm very lucky.
Now that you have quit your job and your job is to make music, what's your process like? Do you wake up in the morning and have a scheduled time to write?
You know, no, I'm trying to figure it out because before, you know, having work throughout the week, I had to work around that.
And it makes you work harder when you have less time, don't you think?
Absolutely. The first month was really difficult for me because, one, I didn't have a car, and so I was stuck in my apartment, and which is kind of far from everybody, and so I couldn't get picked up really, and it was hard waking up and being motivated because I was bummed about my car and I was just bummed. But the second month was a little bit easier for me. I was scheduling things. If I don't have a schedule, it's crap. I'm not as, you know, organized. If I don't wake up and go, okay, I have to get this done, I have to get this done, I have to get this done. But it's hard. Creating is draining, and I don't think people realize that. You know, with writing the first two EPs I've written, and, you know, the collection of songs I've written that I'm sitting with, you know, over the past, you know, year, it's very draining. You, especially as a kind of writer that I am and the kind of artist and creator that I am, I'm more of like I'm a maker. I'm not the best singer, but I need to create and make things. And waking up, you know, writing has to be about something. So it can't just, I don't just always wake up and go like, okay, it's not a 9-to-5 where I go sit in a cubicle and I write songs all day. It's not like that for me. I don't know how to write songs about nothing. I don't know how to write songs about going out, you know, and with my girlfriends, because that's not what inspires me.
What inspires you?
Life, my life. I write, you know, somebody asked me when my first EP came out, the Treehouse EP I put out a couple months ago by myself. They said, what was the writing process of that? And I didn't know what to say. I said it wrote itself. And that's so real because, you know, when it's right, and I wrote my second song on the EP is called Sick With Magic. And that was a song I literally was devastated in my loft, devastated, crying. And I sat down at this keyboard I borrowed. This is funny. It's actually Jeff Holm. For anybody that watches The Bachelor, my friend Jeff was on last season and, like, won the babe. I guess that's, like, what the prize is. You win the babe. But Jeff used to live downtown, and he was, like, gone for a couple months, and he let me borrow his keyboard. That's just, like, a funny thing that I think is fun to talk about. Anyways, I had his beautiful keyboard, and I was devastated in my apartment crying. And I sat down, and I literally wrote it in, like, I just sang it. And after I did it, I was like, oh my gosh. And I got a pencil and paper out to remember. And I wrote down the chords quickly and I wrote down the lyrics quickly. And it just happens when it's right. You know, I don't ever try to force anything. There's this Bukowski book. I don't know. I guess he has a billion, but I never read the whole thing. But the first like story or poem in the book is, it talks about not forcing it. And if it does, it needs to like burst out of you. And that is something that's, you know, I think you have to push yourself. I think you have to sit in a room and rewrite and rewrite and rewrite until it comes. But I think at a certain point you go like, okay, I'm forcing this and I've got to stop. So it's hard for me because I don't wake up in the morning and force myself through anything. I try to let it happen. I drive around a lot and I sing with, I have like my voice note thing open and I just sing into my phone, anything. And then I go home and I go like, okay, what was crap? And what is good, and then I work on that. But I do a lot of like co-writing lately. I really like it. You kind of get funny when you write too much on your own. It gets to a point where I felt like I was like losing touch with reality. I didn't know how to communicate. I was so involved in writing in my house. I went home to see my parents, and they had people over. There's probably like 20 people in my house, and I freaked out, and I had to go sit in the bathroom and like calm myself because I hadn't been around that many people. I had just been in my apartment or at work, but work doesn't count because you're just kind of like, you have like a...
going through the motions.
Yeah. And so having to like actually talk to people and people be like, oh, so what's going on in your life? And you're like, I don't know how to answer any of these questions because I've been at home alone for 3 weeks.
I completely and utterly relate to that right now. Like, I'm going through the same shit where now that I'm not like fully employed.
Right.
When I'm busy, I'm very busy. And when I'm not busy, I don't know what the fuck to do with myself. And I don't want to leave the house and spend a bunch of money. And so I'm sitting at home trying to work on things. And yeah, it gets weird when you're back in a group of people and you haven't talked to anyone other than like chatting to friends on the computer.
Right.
You leave and go to a party and you just fucking, I feel like I'm a cokehead blabbing a million miles a minute because I haven't talked to anyone in a while.
Right. That's good that you get that way because I don't talk. I get into the public situation and I go like, I can't say it. And I invert. And I'm not, you know, I'm very social and I like people and I guess sometimes, but I had to go to, I went to a bridal shower. My friend is getting married, and we planned this bridal shower. And, you know, it's hard to explain to people that don't, that aren't artists or aren't makers of some sort of craft, what it's like to be at home alone, writing and making things. Not that it's a burden. It's not like, oh, this, it's such a heavy job. But, you know, it's hard to explain. I went to a bridal shower where it was just women. When is the last time you've ever been in a room? I mean, I guess you're not a girl, but, or with just dudes. It's overwhelming. And I guess it's not the same for guys. Maybe, I don't know, but.
You know, when I'm in a room with just women, it's a different story. Nah, I feel you. It's hard to relate to a room full of anybody, because once you get a certain sampling of the human race in a room together, everyone has their different paths. And it leads to a lot of just empty small talk.
That's not my thing. You know, I can make conversation with anybody. I love talking to people in line at the grocery store and at airports and on the airplane. And I like to be friendly. I love asking the people at the grocery store how their day is. How's it going? You know, it's nice. I like people. That's why I loved being a waitress, because I had these little interactions with people throughout my day, and I got to make these small bonds and connections with people, and then they would leave, and that was it.
But at the same time, when someone asks you, hey, what have you been up to? That's a scary question.
It is the most terrifying question. I was at dinner last night with my uncle and my aunt, and he was like, so what's going on in your life lately? Tell me about it. And I'm like, and you freeze because, well, A, like, what do you care about it? Like, what do you want me to tell you that's going to be interesting to you? Because I could tell you a lot of things, you know? But it's the way people ask questions sometimes, like at the bridal shower, people that don't really understand or want to relate, you know? It's just very uncomfortable. You're like, how do you respond to questions like, so what's it like to be in LA? I don't know. What's it like to be in San Diego? What's it like to be you? I asked this question to this man the other day. I said, what's your life like? And I really meant it. Like, what is it like? What do you do? Like, tell me all about it. But it was such a different question than, like, so what is it that you do? And I hate that question, man. That's such an LA question. Like, why? Because if I don't know something cool, you're not going to be my friend. Well, so what is it that you do?
That's such a standard, like, LA introduction. Oh, what do you do? But it's because everyone in LA kind of carries himself like they're somebody, don't you think?
I guess so. But I don't know. I don't interact a lot with that kind of world.
I mean, you're somebody, though, where when I first met you, I wanted to ask, what do you do? Because you seem like a character.
Yeah, but that's...
You're very interesting.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know. I think sometimes it's the way that people ask it, and it's the intent behind the question. You know, I had friends in town from Australia that are in this awesome band, and we went out the other night, and we were over by that place of birds, and there's that restaurant that, like, fancy, like, I don't know. I had dinner there one time, and the food was whatever, but... outside was really cool, and they have, like, a place where you can, like, sit outside, and there was a birthday party going on, and so I randomly knew a bunch of people there, and I was being introduced to people, and there's just such a difference sometimes. Like, you get around a person, and you go, like, I can be myself around you, and you can just feel it immediately. Like, I felt that way with you, and, like, Adam, and all of our friends, and then... You know, you get thrown into a certain crowd where you just have the, you just know that no matter what you do, you're not going to impress these people. And that no matter what you do, you're not going to win, and you're not, it's just not, you know, worth, like, putting out something. And that's that vibe a lot of the times with people that go, like, so, what do you do? And you're like, ugh. And sometimes it's even harder when it's from someone that's kind of successful and you know what they do. And you're like, man, I don't want to tell you because you're just going to make me feel small.
But at the same time, you have to think those people that do have that success, they've gone through the same thing that you have gone through.
Yeah, I guess it goes back to the intent and the way that the question,
you know,
is
said. If you were talking to Jewel, she said, what do you do? And you're like, well, you know, I used to live in my car and now I'm a singer. She'd go, oh, me too.
Right. I hope she'd say that, because yeah. Jewel's so cool.
She's from Alaska too.
Are you from? You're from Alaska.
Holla.
Holla.
Speaking of people in your life that you talk to that are successful, can you tell me about whose dogs you babysit? I went to eat lunch at Swingers the last day that you were working. Me and Adam and Romo and some other friends, we met up so that we could be your last table that you served.
Yeah.
And out walks Drew Carey.
Yeah.
Like, onto a little scooter that he has.
Yeah.
And, like, you guys were, like, fucking hugging and, like, old friends. And I'm like, wait, was that Drew Carey?
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about your relationship with Drew Carey, because I find that very interesting.
Drew's the best. I met Drew at Swingers. He comes in all the time. And I had been serving him you know, for like, I don't know, maybe a year or maybe less. I'm not really sure. Time is weird in my head. And it was after New Year's, not this past New Year's, but the New Year's before. And we've been friends for a couple years now. And I had a show in Texas with Porter Robinson and the M Machine. And then Porter and I were flying back on a jet, which was the coolest thing ever, to San Diego in the same night to play two New Year's shows. And it was just really cool. I never experienced anything like that. And it was fun to experience that with like Porter, who's like a dear friend of mine, and to be, you know, with basically family. It was awesome. And I had such a good New Year's. So when I came back to work, and I said, I saw Drew at the counter, and I said, "Hey, like, how was your New Year's?" And he was like, "Eh." And we kind of got into talking about, you know, life and things, and he asked how mine was. And I said, "It was awesome. I got to go to Texas, and then I flew on a jet to San Diego, and I had two shows in one night." And he said, "I didn't even know you made music. Like, where can I find it?" And I said, "Well, I only have one thing out. You can find it on iTunes." And a couple days later, he came back in, and he's like, "I bought your song." And I was like, "What? What do you mean you bought my song?" And he's like, "I bought it. It's so good." And we just kind of become friends to where, you know, I was talking about really cool places to go downtown. And one of my best friends from work, we were talking about it. And I said, "Oh, yeah, you know, Drew, blah, blah, blah." And talking about what the New Year's conversation we had, I thought it was so cool. And talking about, you know, we would talk about career and life, and he was just someone I could talk to about all that cool stuff with, about what I was doing in LA, and, you know, why living on my car, that's something he could relate to, and working at a restaurant, something he could relate to. He worked at Denny's. And finally, we just kind of asked if he wanted to hang out with us. We're like, "Do you want to be our friend? Do you want to go, like, do something?"
Like the little 4-year-old girl you saw ask, "Do you want to be my friend?"
That's literally what happened. And we asked him, "Hey, you know, if you want to..." I wrote down a bunch of really cool places for him. And we just said, "If you ever want to go to any of those places, call us." And he totally did. And he was like, "I have this event downtown I have to go to. It's like some bowling, celebrity bowling thing. Do you want to come?" And we were just kind of like, "Yeah, of course we want to come." And we like got picked up in a car, and it was so crazy. And we show up to the event, and like Kevin Hart is there, some guy from Entourage was there that we kept heckling. Like, we were right behind the bowler, so I just kept heckling all night. I got to like hold Kevin Hart's like little baby, and like I met him twice before that. And literally, he's, like, just as tiny as Sunny and I. He's the smallest. And he's so cool. He's so nice. He, like, texted Drew. He's like, "Tell your friends it's so nice to meet them." I'm like, "Oh, you're Kevin Hart. I watch you on, like, YouTube."
A surprising fact about Drew Carey that I noticed at Swingers is that he's actually, like, very tall and pretty good-looking in real life.
Yeah.
I feel like he plays up the dorky role on TV, but, like, when he takes his glasses off, he's, like, a pretty fucking... he's, like, a pretty handsome dude.
Have you ever Googled him, like, when he was younger and, like, in the military?
No.
Stud. Total stud. It was at that event, the first time we ever hung out, that he was telling me about these books that changed his life. And I think he joked and said something like, "It's what made me a millionaire." And I looked at him and I said, "I want to read those books. I want to read any of those books. Will you write them down for me?" He said, "No problem." And I show up to work and he has a stack of books for me. And I'm like, "You don't have to buy these books for me." He goes, no, "I totally, you know, I want to read them." And I went home and I started reading these like success books that like totally changed my attitude about life. And it was at such a good time because I was writing and I was feeling really sad and I didn't know how to not feel that way. It's an emotion that totally, you know, controlled me. And talking with him in at work was something, you know, like I was like, "Oh, Drew, I read this chapter." I would talk to him about what I was reading, and I would talk to him about a lot of things. And he's someone that I could just... I had a question about success, or I had a question about hard, you know, working, or he bought me like this planner that would help you. This guy, Zig Ziglar, Google that name, it will change your life, made this planner to help you actually achieve stuff, like actually accomplish things. And he bought it for me. He's like, "I thought you would like this." And it totally helps.
What are some of the books? Can you remember?
Mm-hmm. Think and Grow Rich is one. And See You at the Top. Great book. Zig Ziglar is incredible. The University of Success. And I can't remember the last one he bought. But then he bought me these, like, notes from the universe that are, like, these just, like, positive, like, you know, every page is just, like, a positive thought. it's really cool. And he, there's like a series of like three or four that he got for me. But just having that relationship, you know, it just kind of worked out to where I was like struggling a little bit. And he was like offering me a job to dog sit. So I watch his puppies. It's awesome.
So you have a manager now?
No.
No? No manager?
Not at the moment.
You need a manager? I'll manage you.
You will?
No, probably not. I'd be terrible at it. I can't talk to suits. How often do you have to go into your label and have meetings and stuff?
You know, I'm really close to my A&R.
You want to shout him out?
Yeah. Chris Morris.
Holla, Chris Morris.
I love him. He's one of my favorite people. I'm lucky to have him. He was a friend before he became my A&R. So I've just known him for a minute. So we have a good friendship.
How does he help guide your career?
He helps with scheduling. And if I want to like help, you know, write with somebody, or I'm like, oh, it'd be interesting to do, can we try? And he kind of just makes stuff happen. You know, it's a little bit difficult not having management at the moment, trying to make the creative things in my head I see, you know, come true.
When you're writing at home, are you producing for yourself and then trying to get into the studio afterwards to recreate it with the perhaps a quote-unquote bigger producer?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I work in Ableton, and, you know, fortunately for me, everyone, you know, around me works in Ableton.
You're pretty good at producing, though. Like, you've played me stuff in the car that's like, oh, wow, you made this?
Yeah.
It's a very professional. You're welcome. Very professional sounding.
Thank you. I mean, I learned from the best, I think. And I'm not, like, fantastic, but that was what was really cool about the first EP and the second EP that I'm putting out, you know, at the end of this month or beginning of next month. We might push it back. But I structured everything myself. And then I went to my friend Patrick, who I made the EPs with, and I said, these, you know, I had the stems, and I said, these are songs. And, you know, maybe these aren't the right sounds or the ideas there, but I don't know how, I don't know everything. I'm still learning. And to be able to say, like, you know, you play songs, or I'll play my song for people, I'm like, I made this. Like, this part specifically, like, is me. You know, like, I would, like, slide Patrick's chair over and be like, let me do this. Mwahaha. And I would, you know, rearrange the bass line, or I would add certain sounds. Like, I have a song coming out called Run, where instead of having a clap, I went through all these sounds to find a bite sound, like someone biting into an apple. And, you know, Run Home Jack was mostly me, which I'm so proud of. But, like, the little wind chimes and the babies laughing, like, that's sitting there forever trying to find these, like, perfect sounds. And, I don't know, really cool. I'm really lucky to have had someone like Patrick who allowed me to be so a part of making the song. Because I had written them, and I came to him, and I said, can we do something with these? And for him to allow me to be a part of the actual production, because before co-writing with people and meeting people, you know, my first co-writes out here when I moved, I hated co-writing because I was told that's not how it works. That's not how you write a song. No, 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 no. And, you know, my structure is weird. The way that I write, I don't know what I'm doing. I just make it up. I sit in my room and I go, okay. And I wrote Treehouse. And Patrick came in and said, like, okay, let's move this here and we'll double this as the chorus. Now you have a song. And so to have him help me make things a little bit more proper, but then to have, you know, him allow me to go like, okay, not so serious. Let's try something a little bit more fun, or let me be a part of it. I don't know what my sound is. People ask me all the time, what's your sound? What do you sound like? I don't know. I'm figuring it out. You know, the first stuff you put out as an artist is never, I mean, if you think about it, is your first EP or first whatever out, that's not like exactly what you want it to sound like. It's like almost. It's like getting closer to what exactly it is. You're figuring it out as an artist.
Right now, what would you classify your music as? Like, is it kind of, it's almost like singer-songwriter pop music, but dancey?
Totally. That's something that I think, you know, I think when After All I Ask of You came out, I didn't know what electronic music was, right? I knew what Aqua was. It's been called synth pop. Okay. I call it Treehouse. Like,
I get it.
You get it. I don't have to explain that good. You know, it's fairy music. It's like Postal Service-esque, you know?
Is it post-Postal Service?
It's post-Postal Service. Tight.
Before you met Sonny and moved to LA, was that what you were interested in? Or did that influence where the music went, hanging out with him?
You know, when I moved to LA, I had sort of just met with some people that were in a band, And I didn't really know what I didn't have a clear vision of what I wanted to do. But I knew I wanted to do it, and I knew I wanted to perform, and I knew I loved karaoke, and I knew I loved being on stage, and I wanted to just do that at whatever cost. And I met some people that wanted to kind of make me like a Lolita figure. I look like I'm 12. They wanted me to be the new Aqua, which I was so down with because Aqua's the best. And I was too down for that. I was like, okay, tight. And nothing really ever came of that. And the songs I was recording, they just weren't, I was trying to write and the other people that would write with me would be like, nah. And they would shut my idea down. And so I got like really sad. And I remember going home to Sunny and just sobbing and being like, I hate this. And he was like, you know, you can make whatever you want to make, right? And you know, when like someone says that, you're like, yeah, but you didn't really know that you could do that. It's like such an obvious thing. And, you know, he kind of talked me through leaving my first, you know, management. And he was such a part of saying like, why don't you try this? Why don't you explore this route a little bit more? I didn't know what the heck dubstep was. My sister knew who Deadmau5 was before I did. And she's a baby. And, you know, such a foreign thing to me. And, you know, after All Ask You came out, we had feature offers, right? I remember going over and him being like, so Diplo hit us up and asked about you doing a feature. And I told him no. That you weren't doing features. I didn't know who Diplo was. So I was hesitant because it was work.
So do you kick yourself for that now?
No, no, not at all. I remember, and Zed did the same. And Zed was like, you know, Sunny said, why don't you listen to the song? And if you feel inspired, write over it. But we discussed it. We discussed what it meant to do more features without putting something out of mine first. And his suggestion, which was the route I took, was why don't you make, you know, something and put it out as you before you do another feature so that you're not quartered into something. Because there are those girls out there in the EDM world that did so many features that tried to put an EP out that was so, you know, heavy on the, like, it was just two big names where her name or the girls' names are overshadowed by the DJ name that produced the song, and then the EP that the girl would put out didn't flops because it's not about her, you know what I mean? And that was something that was so important to me, that my first name is Penny. My first name is not featuring. And, you know, I fought really hard for that. But having explored the progressive house route, I think a lot of people thought I was going to, you know, be a part of that, like, heavy EDM world where I was just seeing all these top lines, which is the, I'm doing the exact opposite of that. And I'm on a dance label, but I didn't know until after I got my deal what my sound was going to be like. You know, I had a couple demos. There's another song Sunny and I did together that's sitting on my laptop that no one's heard. And some other tiny little demos I had, but they weren't anything substantial. And I'm so lucky to have someone vouch for me and for me to get a deal out of it. And then, you know, have the funds and be able to make, you know, to be able to make music. Now I'm figuring it out.
Without getting too specific with numbers and stuff, can you kind of tell us what having a record deal means on your level? Being that you are a new artist who was discovered and signed instantly. I don't mean instantly, like not an overnight success, but, you know, the song comes out, you have label interest. With no other projects quite out yet, how does it work?
That was crazy. People asked me, oh, you got a development deal. No, I got a real deal.
And what's the difference between the two?
It means nothing, to be honest, and everything at the same time.
But, I mean, you have a budget to work with.
Yeah, there's a little bit more of a budget now. I've paid for everything out of pocket that I've done so far. All my videos I've paid for, all my videos I've directed, I've edited. I don't know, because it didn't change. My life didn't change. I didn't tell anybody for a very long time that I got signed. I didn't tell my family. I didn't tell a few close friends knew, and my management at the time and my lawyer, and that was it. It didn't mean my life didn't change overnight. I kept my day job. I worked. I worked for an entire year. I didn't tell anybody for an entire year, and you know, when my EP came out on iTunes, I was like, I should probably tell my mom because she's going to see it, say Warner Music Group, and she's going to go, what is this? and I'm going to go, let me tell you. I actually haven't even told my brother. Still, because it didn't change anything. I'm still making music with my friends. But I think what it will allow is I now have a platform. I now have somewhere to put my stuff. I'm really fortunate for that. It was an opportunity, and it felt right in my gut, and I said yes, which is how I've gotten this far. Anytime there was an opportunity that came up, if it felt wrong, I said no. If it felt right, I said yes. And I tried to say yes most of the time until, you know, there was a couple times where I said yes, and then I was like, ooh, and I tried to back out quickly out of the situation. But I wanted to try everything, because I don't know what I'm doing. I don't think anybody knows what they're doing, you know? But I think trying and being positive and just, you know, having a goal in mind worked out. And it paid off.
Well, thank you for saying yes to coming in today.
Aw, Lee.
I appreciate it.
Even with my stuffy nose.
Yes, even with your stuffy nose. I wish you the best. And before we go, mm-hmm. tell the people where to find you online. Like, what's your Twitter?
My Twitter is at whoispenny. You can find me on Facebook. It's Penny Bird Rabbit, one word. Penny Bird Rabbit. You can find me on Instagram, at Bird Rabbit. And you can find me on Tumblr. birdrabbit.tumblr.com.
Penny, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And follow us too on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat. Follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, at
hey.
I Am Database. follow me at It's Intuition. And find us on YouTube. We're going to try to make a song today in the studio, and you can see Penny perform it. So youtube.com/thatskindaneat. Thank you guys for tuning in. I appreciate it. This was Kinda Neat.
Yay.